Well, aren't you a regular Nancy Drew?
I learned that from the Nancy Drew detective.
Okay, go.
You think you can follow the clues and solve the case of the missing condiment, Nancy Drew?
He knows, I've read every Nancy Drew mystery ever written.
Nancy, please tell me you're joking.
Wow, you suck at this Nancy Drew stuff. You should get a new hobby.
My name is Carson Drew, and this is my assistant, Nancy.
Nancy Drew.
It's curtains for you, Miss Drew.
Nancy Drew strikes again.
A regular Nancy Drew.
Welcome, regular Drews.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to episode 66. I just realized it's episode 66. Spooky vibes for a spooky show.
How appropriate.
We're going to be discussing the pilot of the Nancy Drew CW show. It's just called Pilot. There is no title. It's just Pilot.
Yep.
But the little, what do you call it? Snippet? What do they call that little bit of description? Whatever. The little description that they have of the show is, when a socialite is murdered, Nancy becomes a suspect in the crime along with four other teens. So that's what we're discussing today, regular Drews. And I know that there are many, many fans of this show. So yes. I hope that you're listening and I hope that you enjoy this episode. I think if you listen to our previous episodes, you'll know that Corey and I are not huge fans of the show. I haven't even watched all of the show. Corey is up to date, I think. You said you just watched the recent ones that just came out.
Mm-hmm. So at the time of recording this, there's only two more episodes for season four that have not aired yet. So obviously I haven't seen those yet, but otherwise I am up to date on the show. I have seen everything at this point.
Yeah. But we're going back to the very beginning. We're not talking about recent episodes. We're talking about the very first episode because it's a good place to start. You know, why not start at the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. What overall thoughts do you have about the show in general and the pilot, Corey?
What an episode.
Yeah, I know.
Honestly, like you were saying, I kind of forgot my thoughts on this one. I thought that I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings here. And I think that the show itself as a whole is a whole different conversation than just the pilot.
Right.
Rewatching it, I liked it a lot more than
it's
I remember.
It's so good.
Right? Like,
so good. Not to jump all over. You say.
This pilot itself feels more like an homage to Nancy Drew than it does like a direct adaptation. I feel like if you go into it with the expectation of you're going to get a TV show about the Nancy Drew that you grew up with, that's not what you're going to get. You are going to get a modern day teen drama that has flair of Nancy Drew and has little Easter eggs about Nancy Drew that any fan would recognize, but it's not going to feel like you are watching a Nancy Drew TV show, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's very much not your mother's Nancy Drew. I thought that that's exactly the thought that popped into my head the moment, like, we get that little intro and then it's like, boom, Nancy's having sex with Nick. I was like, oh, right.
And I know that was really controversial when this first aired. People were not happy about that. And so that alone was the reason a lot of people chose not to continue watching, because it felt so different from – I mean, not that I don't have any issue with Nancy having sex, but it is very out of the norm. We've never seen that, not even in any of the files or anything where she's a little bit older. It is geared towards an older audience. But we have two sex scenes in this pilot alone.
Yes.
Crazy for Nancy Drew. So it's very, very different than what you'd expect. Yeah.
It is. I mean, it is a little bit like, this is a show produced by the CW. So it's like,
yes,
to a certain, you kind of have to expect that.
Right.
Right. This is a show made for, you know, young adults. Like, it's very much supposed to be sexy, spicy. That's the CW flair. And so I think, you know, I expected a lot of that going in, but I can definitely understand how people who are, especially people who are fans of the mystery stories, you know, revised in the 50s, Nancy is very prim and proper. Nancy would never even discuss sex.
Yeah.
Engage in it. You know, she's very quote unquote appropriate, right? And so it's just, yeah, I can understand how that would be really jarring for people and not something that they would want to watch, which is fair.
As far as pilots go, though, it's pretty solid. Like, it made me want to stick around and learn more and see how it plays out, you know?
For real. I had forgotten. And watching this pilot makes me want to watch more. And watching this pilot, I was like, I do not give this show enough credit.
Yeah.
Because, I think the reason for that is because I love Nancy Drew so much. And so I have really high standards, right, for what I want to see. But watching the pilot, there's literally nothing I can complain about in the pilot. Sure. It's so good. They did such a good job. Like, it's just, they did such a good premise. Like, even like having, you know, her mom die a little bit later in life. And so that can be like her prior trauma or whatever. And so she's given up mysteries. Like, that makes so much sense, right? Like, to start off the show that way. And then the whole, like, the casting is fantastic. The whole vibes of the town are fantastic. The character design and characterization of all of the supporting characters is fantastic. Like, they've clearly done their research with like all the references that are scattered throughout it. So you can't say that it wasn't made by people who have an understanding of what Nancy Drew is and what Nancy Drew is about, because it's so clear from the very first episode that they do. It's just they've decided to take it in a different direction. And so I feel like it's not super fair for me to say anymore that, like, you know, it's just that it's not Nancy Drew because it's Supernatural, and that if you could just put a different name on it, then it would be a fine show and I wouldn't have an issue with it. I don't think that's fair for me to say. I think it is Nancy Drew. It's just not the Nancy Drew that I would write and that I am a fan of, but that's okay. You know, I was just saying before, we were talking a little bit before this, that not every TV show is made for me. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see why people like it and why people are huge fans of this show. I think that it does really great, really, really great things. So,
there are a lot of things that I absolutely love about this show. Like the casting, I think the cast is fantastic. Every single person was perfectly cast for their role. A lot of the issues that I have are just things that come up later of like, I feel like Nancy solved that a little bit too easily. And it's, you know, it's a little bit too much horror than what I would personally want. But it, the things that they set up here, they play out kind of in an interesting way that sometimes I feel like could have been done a little bit better. But again, as pilots go, I think it's fantastic just on its own.
Yeah. Immaculate. Okay. Three words.
Okay. Well, horror, I guess. It is technically classified as a horror genre. Really? It is listed as that.
But would you call this first episode a horror?
No.
Though?
No.
I mean, it's definitely mystery suspense. It's definitely spooky.
Very thriller, dark. Yeah, very spooky.
Like spooky. It's very spooky. The ambiance is like out the ass spooky. So good. Yeah. Love it. Like, it would, if I, like, I almost want to put this on my watch list just to watch it Halloween time. Like, maybe even the whole show. Maybe I'll binge it this Halloween season or something. Because when I watched the pilot, I was like, I need to watch more.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll do that because it's such a vibe, such a spooky vibe. So spooky.
I was going to say sexy. I don't know.
Yeah, I was like spooky, sexy. I literally thought sexy too, but that seems kind of silly.
Yeah.
Emotional trauma. Yes. Spooky emotional trauma. And maybe like the past.
Small town history.
Okay. Flashbacks, that kind of thing. So, history in the past, because it's all the pilot really is about things that happened before. It's about previous things. It's about everything that happened in the past. There's very little current about it. It's just there's like one incident that we'll talk about that happens in the present day, and then it's kind of even the, you know, the quick wrap up that we get to that in that episode is still all about stuff that happened in the past. So it's a pilot. So it's supposed to start us off. So of course there's going to be a lot of exposition, but so that's why.
And of course this show, the structure is that the whole mystery is going to be solved through the whole season. So of course they don't even get close to solving it in this episode. We're not going to get the resolution until the season finale, but they do have the smaller mysteries for each episode as they kind of work toward the bigger mystery, which is fun.
Yeah, I love that. Love a season-long arc. Love it. I can't stand episodic shows. I don't know what it is. It's like, if I don't have something to like capture my attention, I can't pay attention. And so it's like, if, you know, if it's just like something that's going to be resolved in an episode, I almost don't care. I don't know what that is, but like, I don't enjoy shows. I mean, I think they're, so like my example for this is always like The Office or Parks and Rec, like those kinds of like episodic comedy shows, right? I can't watch them. I can watch like a one-off and I think it's funny or whatever, but I'm just not engaged. I'm not excited for another episode. Like, I just don't.
It's no longer storyline.
Right.
Well, what about the 70s show with Pamela Sue Martin? That was very episodic. And
yeah, but I'm also, I love it for sure, but I don't keep watching it. I haven't watched more than what we, I mean, I've watched some, but not, I don't like, I'm not excited to watch the next one. Sure. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, no,
that's fair.
Sorry to this man, but I don't. But yeah, so I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the season long arc. But I also have a suggestion for how this show could be better.
Okay.
That doesn't involve a season long arc. But we can talk about that at the end.
Oh, you don't want to say it
for
now?
Things that we would change. No. Okay. I think, you know.
Is it more relevant after we've discussed it?
I think so. Okay. I think so. Yeah.
Very good.
Okay. You ready to get started then, Corey?
Yes. Very ready.
Okay. Do you want to start us off?
Sure.
Okay. This is a very iconic first scene.
It is. It really is. So we start off, before we even see Nancy for the first time, we see this woman who is standing in this like beautiful pink dress, standing on a cliff, looking out over this churning sea. And there is this creepy children's rhyme kind of like playing over the scene. And the rhyme is about someone named Lucy Sable. And I can't remember the exact words, but like Lucy Sable.
I wrote it down.
You did below? Okay.
Yeah, so... Lucy Sable once was able to look upon the sea, but someone got her in the water. Now that's where she'll always be.
Mm-hmm. That's so creepy. Oh my gosh. But so we hear this chanting and Nancy comes over as kind of our narrator and begins telling us that Horseshoe Bay's most infamous sea queen wore her crown for only one night. And so we kind of get this story about what we're seeing here, that Lucy Sable was crowned the sea queen of this town, Horseshoe Bay. We're set in Horseshoe Bay here, before she fell into the sea. And then we just see this woman like fall off the cliff.
Horrifying.
Mm-hmm. And Nancy says people say that she still haunts Horseshoe Bay. And then we get the title card of Nancy Drew with the really exciting music.
Can we talk about the title card really quick?
Yes, please. They change
it. It's so good. Okay. Oh, well, I don't know.
I don't know what they change it to. It's just the words Nancy Drew, but in the pilot, they have like a little symbol over the name, and that's not there in the rest of the series. They changed that for later, but.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so simple and so beautiful. And
oh, it's perfect. Yeah.
I don't know whatever font that they chose, but script that they put Nancy Drew in is so classic. It's like, it reminds me of the, early aughts Nancy Drew mystery stories, the ones in the, I forget who prints them, but the ones with like the glossy covers and like,
oh, the Aladdin editions,
or? Maybe the Aladdin ones. Okay. I don't remember, but it reminds me of the script on those books, which is very nostalgic for me because I read a lot of those when I was young. And so I love that. And when they put the title card the first time, you get this shot of Horseshoe Bay, like the beautiful Horseshoe Bay, and it's just gorgeous. It looks like it just looks like the cover of a Nancy Drew book, and it's I love it. I love it. Anyway.
I don't know exactly why they chose to make Horseshoe Bay the setting rather than River Heights, because I made a little list of all the mystery stories references that we get. We will learn that Nancy lives on River Heights Drive, yes. But of course they didn't set it in River Heights, and I don't know why they chose to do that, but I do really, really like this setting. We're set in this coastal town in Maine, actually, so it's very foggy, very spooky all the time. I think it lends a lot to the ambiance, but I think it's very interesting. Yeah. I have read a theory, I don't know how true this is, but a theory that they chose that name because originally they wanted to kind of throw a lot more Hardy Boys references in there of like Horseshoe Bay, Bayport, and like kind of go off of that. So I wonder if that kind of came into the name process.
Yeah. But I mean, I can understand why they would choose not to set it in like a suburb type situation.
Right.
Because they're most successful, the most successful CW show at the time is Riverdale.
Right.
And that's already very idyllic small town. And so to set another horror mystery show in that kind of same setting probably is a little too close to something that they already have. Mm-hmm. Plus, the whole concept of like a spooky seaside town is so tropey and so like classic I can understand why they would choose that. In contrast to what they already have, but they can still kind of play to their strengths in that kind of setting, you know? So I get it. It makes me sad because, of course, I want to see River Heights, but I get it. And I think the vibes are great. So, you know, I can't really complain vibes are too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Just immaculate vibes. It's fantastic. Yeah. And the whole show is kind of tinted this like dark bluish, blackish kind of vibe with the title card and everything.
It's so pretty. It's such it's a pretty gorgeous show.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. They definitely did a good job in that sense. Mm-hmm. And it is set in 2019, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
No, that's right, because the entire show is set in 2019 for all four seasons. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, so we after the title card, we flash to present day where Nancy is in a graveyard. She is wearing a fancy dress and a crown and a sash. So effectively, like, this is their prom, and Sea Queen is prom queen, right? And she is in this graveyard with some of her friends, and they're, you know, spinning her in a circle, making her turn around, and they're singing that nursery rhyme about Lucy Sable. And then we see Nancy, like, take off the tiara, and then she goes and puts it on Lucy Sable's headstone. So
morbid.
Some, like, rite of passage for the Sea Queen to do this every year, apparently. So it's very spooky. And then all of a sudden, as Nancy like goes to set the tiara down on top of the headstone, a guy like just jumps out from behind the grave. And so it's just, you know, it's a silly little jump scare moment. But we learned that this is, it is effective. I jumped.
Yeah.
And she kisses the boy and they're, you know, just having a great time talking about being Sea Queen, right? But then Nancy kind of looks off.
I was going to say, she kisses this random boy. Who is this boy? Who is this previous paramour of Nancy?
I was going to ask that as well, because we don't ever meet these friends either. Mm-hmm. We'll have to talk about this in a minute. So she's, you know, the friends are all talking to each other and the boyfriend's there and or whatever, but Nancy just kind of looks off in the distance while this is going on. And she sees a very ghostly woman-looking figure in a very fancy dress, just kind of at the edge of the graveyard in the distance along the line of the trees. Nancy just kind of shakes it off, and she's like, I don't believe in ghosts. I believe in looking for the truth. Okay. All right.
Love it.
Then we get this, like, very interesting little flashback montage situation. We see Nancy is a little girl and she's, I guess, in their backyard watching her parents bury something, or maybe even unbury it. Like they're pulling it out of the ground. I don't know. This is very strange. Unclear. We'll have to talk about this as well, of why they were doing this. And little Nancy is just standing there and mom comes over and is like, oh, don't worry, Nancy. It's just a dream. But present day Nancy knows that it wasn't just a dream, whatever she's just seen. Then we flash forward again a little bit further in time. Nancy is a young teenager, and we see a search party out on the street looking for someone named Rose. So Nancy informs us that this is her first ever case. This is how she really became hooked on mysteries originally, was this little girl in town goes missing, Rose Turnbull, actually.
Mm-hmm. And Nancy, nice reference.
Extremely clever reference. I love this. And Nancy says that she was the only one who was able to solve it because she found her behind a hidden staircase.
Right.
Yes. And so we get this like little newspaper article clipping cutout that we see where Nancy is the hero. She solves the case and, you know, local teen detective finds missing girl or whatever. And then we zoom out a little bit further from that newspaper clipping shot. And I'll actually have to turn to my notes here for a second. Yes. Because we see this whole corkboard in front of Nancy. And a little, it's kind of blurry the way that they do the camera work as they're zooming out. You can't see all of it, but it's basically just this collage that Nancy has made over time of all the cases that she solved and all the newspaper articles that have been written about her. But it does reference a few things. So many
references.
Yes. The ones that I was able to catch. And again, I think that there were probably more. It's just because the camera work, it was blurry in this scene. It's kind of hard to see exactly what it was. But we do have references to Pine Hill, Redgate Farm, Secret of the Wooden Lady, Ivory Charm, and Hollow Oak. So,
yeah.
Very good. So, you know, Nancy's been solving mysteries for quite a while now is the idea that we're supposed to get from this scene. But Nancy kind of refers to this as being who she was in the past tense, not who she is today. We see another shot of her like maybe about a year ago. So now we're almost up to present day. She is applying online to Columbia University. Very exciting. This is where we see that she lives on River Heights Drive because she's like entering her address into the online application. But then she goes downstairs and we see Carson and Nancy's mom sitting at the dining table kind of crying over a laptop or crying over some paperwork or something that they have in front of them. And Nancy goes down and is like, what's going on? And we learn mom has been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And Nancy kind of talks about it, how this is like the one thing that she can't solve in her life. And now that she's like gone looking for dark secrets, she has found the darkest of the dark and she doesn't want to go looking anymore because it's too hard on her. So, of course, we learn her mom died very, very soon after this. She got very, very sick and died very quickly. And so ever since then, Nancy has now put aside mysteries and is not doing that anymore. She's now taking a gap year off between finishing high school and going to college because she's just not ready to go to college when she's got all this horrible trauma going on in the most recent year of her life. So yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
You want to take what an intro.
Yes.
What an intro to a show. I have nothing to complain about with this.
It's
nothing.
Very good. Yeah.
It's so good. I mean, every single like shot for shot hits. It hits so good. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, if I were writing a Nancy Drew TV show, I would probably choose things a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. But I mean, ultimately, like that's too good for me to criticize.
Yeah. And it's very interesting that they chose to have Nancy's mom die when she was 18 rather than the 3 years old or 10 years old that we see from the mystery stories. So it makes the trauma and the darkness of what she's been going through a lot more relevant or a lot more recent, a lot more prevalent in her, just everything that's going on with her. So
yeah, narratively, it makes so much sense. It makes so much sense to do that because we don't want a Nancy. We don't want to watch a perfect Nancy Drew on screen. That's no fun. You need your characters to struggle,
right?
You have to have some kind of internal conflict for your characters to be able to overcome and grow and change from, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to start them off in an unideal place. And if Nancy's trauma is so far in the past, she would have had some time to heal, wouldn't have been, and we wouldn't have seen any of that on screen, you know? So it makes so much sense to have it happen so recently.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, that's going to affect Nancy in a huge way. And of course, that could be, oh, maybe she doesn't want to solve mysteries anymore. That makes sense. That makes so much sense. I'm excited just talking about it.
Okay. They really set this up so good. It's a shame that
I think know,
season one was what it was with the mystery. And then the later seasons, they don't even stick with the like murder mystery thing. It just goes off the deep end even more. It's like, y'all, it's so much potential at the start. It's so good.
Yeah.
Well, sorry. Anyway, I'm jumping ahead here.
You're good. Speaking of jumps, right after that introduction, we jump straight to a scene where Nancy is just humping Ned Nickerson, literally thrusting on top of this boy in his, like, garage. I guess he lives at the garage where he works, which is interesting. We also learn that Ned goes by Nick because Ned is a stupid name, which is hilarious and I approve of because Ned is a weird name.
Yeah.
so I get that. It's very clear from this interaction that they are having while they are having sex and wrapping up that Ned is clearly just her sneaky link. Like, yeah, they're not in a relationship, even though he clearly tries to, like, initiate some conversation. But Nancy just really shows no curiosity and is just kind of like, yeah, thanks, bye. You know? She's just there to scratch her itch, you know? So then she quickly runs off to work because she's running late, and she passes what looks like preparations for some kind of festival and a Sea Queen float. So it's been a year since Nancy won the Sea Queen, when she was 18, so now she is 19 years old. This is the year after. Once she gets to work, we see her workplace. She works at this seaside restaurant named The Claw. And she kind of narrates a little bit how she's kind of unhappy with her current circumstances. Like, she talks about how, like, she shouldn't even really be here, and next year she's going to be out of here. We basically learn that the reason why she is working here and taking this gap year is because of the trauma that happened in the previous year. She kind of tanked her grades and bailed on college applications because she was busy grieving. And so she's kind of forced to work here to earn money and kind of go towards this pipe dream of Columbia that she sees as a pipe dream, right? So she gets to work and then she is greeted by her boss, who we learn is none other than George.
Yay!
Not George Fane in this show, but George Fan. Which is great. So George is some wonderful, wonderful Asian American representation. I think this was such an excellent, excellent choice by this show to introduce some diversity to the very historically white, Nancy Drew stories. So props for that. And George is also just hilarious.
Yes.
I love this so much because I think that they did such a great job of being faithful to the book with the George character, but still making George a really lovable and really just kind of relatable character. Mm-hmm. Because I think in the books, and we talked about before how much we just like, George is just annoying and she's just so mean all the time. But George in this show is just grumpy. And so she's like just kind of irascible and just a grumpy boss. And she's clearly grumpy for a reason. You know, she's got stuff going on as we all do. But it's just so on brand, but at the same time, incredibly lovable. So it's almost like an improvement on the original. So I can't give him enough props for that. Oh, yeah.
I can't praise Leah Lewis, who plays George. Yes. She just gives so much depth to the character that I can't not love it. It's wonderful.
She also has like this subtle punk like aesthetic thing going on with like her chunky boots and her jewelry. And it's iconic. Great. Yeah. I think it's a very good take on George. So George is upset with Nancy because Nancy's late, but they also clearly, they're former classmates, they went to high school together, and they clearly have some kind of like historical beef. But Nancy's voiceover kind of alludes to that, and she tells us that she doesn't have time to talk about it now. She'll tell us about it later. Interesting. Do they ever talk about that later? I can't remember from what I have seen of the show.
They later in this episode, George makes some comment about like, well, if you hadn't have been slut shaming me in high school, maybe you'd know this about me or something like that. And Nancy's like, I never spread those rumors. And George is like, well, you laughed about them though, didn't you? And so that it's just some rumor happened in high school. I don't think it's Anything I don't think they're made out to be like, oh, they were childhood friends who have now grown up or grown apart or something like that. I think that they were never friends.
They just ran in different
circles. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they knew each other, but they don't actually become friends for the first time until after the events of the pilot.
That makes more sense. That makes sense. So we also meet at the restaurant a character named Ace. He is very mysterious, and he is washing dishes at the restaurant. He's kind of, I guess, the dish guy. That's what he does. And Nancy doesn't even know his last name. But she kind of just writes him off as being just like some stoner and just kind of, you know, kind of airheaded, you know, just kind of not super intelligent. So, interesting. We also meet Bess.
Who I am obsessed with. Madison's portrayal of Bess is the best thing I've ever seen. I think she is my favorite Bess actress of them all. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Yes. I also can't praise this characterization enough because it's so good. The way that they managed to make Bess, like, it's just she's a fashionista. She's still clearly very clumsy. So we have like these Bess hallmarks, right? But at the same time, the interpretation is just so, it's not a caricature. It's like, that's a real person. You know what I mean? And so it like breathes such life to the character that we love from the books. And so it's just so good. And yeah, the actress does such a great job. And the whole way that they style Bess is beautiful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's just great. So Bess is another waitress at the Claw. And Nancy says that she's not from around here. And of course she mentions how she's dressed very well. She's wearing a Cartier watch and Chanel flats. And she says that Bess is taking a gap year and currently crashing with her rich aunt who lives in the area. Yes. But so we kind of, we don't really see much of their work day. We just kind of meet everybody and then we flash to the end of the day and they are closing up shop for the day. They're shutting down the restaurant. And we hear that the Sea Queen parade is going on outside and Nancy even puts up her phone to record in the window and Bess is kind of like, what are you doing? And Nancy explains that she is putting that phone there to record the fireworks because it's this family tradition to watch the fireworks, but this is the first year her family's not together to watch it, which is incredibly sad.
Well, and they make it sound like nobody even knows about Nancy's mom, that she has intentionally kept that from everyone as well. Because Bess is like, oh, so you can watch it together when you get off work. And Nancy's just like, no.
We My can't. Family will never be whole again. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. It's sad. But she's clearly, it's clear that George is aware. And George mentions it later, but we'll have to talk about that too. So then someone starts banging on the door of the Claw, and Bess kind of calls out to say that they're closed, but George very quickly goes to the door and opens it and says, oh, we can stay open a little longer. And she welcomes in this guy that she calls Mr. Hudson. He's this blonde-looking, annoying, clearly wealthy man who expects to be accommodated. And he's with some other rich, horrible-looking men, and he asks for a quiet table for a private conversation. And so Nancy,
the restaurant's
explains,
empty. It's all quiet. What are you talking about?
And it's also like you came to an empty restaurant to have a private conversation. Like, they're clearly the waitstaff's here. Like, they're gonna hear every single thing that you say. Maybe you should go to like an office. Maybe just a thought, like your own office or your own home. Okay, but whatever. Nancy knows who this is, and she explains that it is Ryan Hudson, who is heir to his family's business empire. She doesn't say what the family business is, yet I believe we learn that in later episodes, and that he is just like carrying on this family's tradition of summering in Horseshoe Bay. So he doesn't live here full time, but he has a summer house here. He orders and he asks George to bring something out to his wife who is in the car. So Nancy brings out some food to the parking lot for his wife. And his wife is talking on her cell phone about how creepy and boring Horseshoe Bay is somehow simultaneously. That it's creepy, but nothing's going on here. She I think she likens it to the seaside town in Jaws, which is
Oh, yeah.
And she asks for a glass of wine from Nancy. And so Nancy goes back inside to pour her one. But she's clearly kind of portrayed as being like this snobbish lady, snobbish rich lady. And she's dissatisfied with the salad that Nancy brought her because, yeah, anyway. So Nancy goes back inside. She's looking for wine. They're out of wine. And so she thinks that she needs to go get some more. But then the lights go out in the restaurant. So the power's out. This doesn't seem to bother Ryan and his friends at all. They just turn on their phone flashlights and they keep talking. Clearly, they're very busy with something. but you see other people start, you know, reacting to this. So I think George says that she's going to go check the breaker box or whatever. Bess is going into the back room to try to get more wine for Nancy. And then Nancy goes and she picks up her phone. I guess probably to get her phone flashlight. Mm-hmm. And also, Bess has refilled the wine. So she's taking the wine out to Mrs. Hudson. So she goes outside, but Mrs. Hudson is nowhere to be seen. And then Nancy kind of trips over something. She looks down and she sees that the plate of food that she brought out to Mrs. Hudson is like broken and on the floor or on the ground outside in the parking lot. Weird. And then suddenly like the fireworks start to go off in the distance. So it gets very loud and like the colors, it's like bright. And Nancy sees Mrs. Hudson collapsed on the ground. So she calls for help, shouts for help, and George, Bess, and Ace all come running out into the parking lot. And also Nick comes running over. He must have been just across the street or something. And they all kind of stand over Mrs. Hudson's body. And they're like, she's dead. And then the police roll up immediately to see every single one of them just standing over her body.
Yes.
Iconic, amazing, yes. Love it.
Great shot.
Yes. We then get this montage of all of them telling their stories to the police. So Bess is like clearly very nervous and she's telling the police that she would ask them to check the security cameras in the storeroom because she was in the storeroom the whole time getting the wine, but they don't have any cameras in the storeroom. George just says that she was in the bathroom by herself. Okay. Very clipped and curt. And Nick says that he was over at the repair shop where he always is. And of course it was closed, so nobody's there to corroborate his story. And then Ace says that, no, he was delivering food to Ryan's table, and Ryan can vouch for the fact that that's where he was. And then Nancy, when she's talking to the police, she says that she must have been the last person to see Mrs. Hudson alive. So good.
Why do I like this so much?
It's just so classic. I think it really just is. Such a classic trope, but the way that they do it is so satisfying because it's like our favorite characters, and the way that they successfully have like already from the moment that these characters get on screen, make them so lovable, just immediately so fun to watch that it's like, it's happening. Yes. It's just so exciting. It's like the culmination of everything you've ever wanted to see with these characters on screen. And then it just happens. It's like my soul just is lifted from this, you know?
Well, and then for each one of them to have the whole, like, weird alibi thing, it makes it very interesting because George didn't say she was going to the restroom.
No.
But that's what she told the police she was doing. And Nick said he was on his way, you know, leaving the closed shop and on his way to go get dinner from the Claw. But the Claw had already closed and was only still open because the Hudsons had arrived. And so, you know, each one of them, they say this stuff. And, like, we know that they're innocent because how would we not trust the Drew crew? But are they innocent? And so it's crazy. I love the way that they set that up. So,
Such a good job. Do you want to take it?
Oh, sure. So at this point, the police haul everyone down to the police station, except for Ace, because of course he had the alibi. Well, except for Ace and the Hudson, Mr. Hudson and his three friends, because they all, of course, alibied one another. But Nancy, Bess, George, and Nick all have to go down to the police station with Chief McGinnis. And while they're kind of just like waiting in the, I guess, lobby area of the police station, they're just sitting on some benches. another character who we meet, Detective Karen Hart, comes over and starts kind of chatting with Nancy. And they clearly both know each other. They're very warm with each other upon realizing that each other is there. But then Chief McGinnis comes over and makes it very clear that he doesn't want Nancy talking to his officers, and shuts that down really quickly. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Nancy asks him if they can leave, and Chief McGinnis just insults them all and says, like, no, you're all suspects. Obviously, you all have to stay. And then he says something. He refers to Nick as being an ex-con.
Hmm.
All right. And Nancy immediately perks up because this is clearly the first time that she is learning this information. And, you know, Nancy, she's not going to be curious about this. Then Nancy, though, she goes to the chief and asks him why he's not questioning Ryan Hudson, who obviously was also present. And she points out that, well, most of the time it's the husband, so you should be looking at the spouse in this case. And he kind of brushes it off and is basically tells Nancy to let him do his job, and he knows what he's doing better than she does. So he brings Nancy into his office for questioning and lets everybody else go. And Nancy starts, you know, kind of going over her version of events when she's talking to Chief McGinnis. And she says that foul play might not even been the cause of death here. We don't know, because obviously she found Tiffany Hudson. She immediately ran over and like checked her pulse and everything. Didn't see any signs of trauma though. So Nancy starts theorizing that, you know, maybe she had like a health issue we didn't know about, or maybe it was like a drug issue, or maybe it was like a food allergy and she just kind of just collapsed. It could have been a lot of things. And the chief says, no, it was definitely had to have been murder, because listen to this. And he plays the 911 call that Tiffany had made just before she died. So this is why the police were able to arrive so quickly on the scene, is because she had already called the police. On the phone call, though, of the recording, we hear her begging for help, screaming, I'm at the call, please come help me. And then we just hear her scream, no, no, no. And then the phone line goes dead.
Oh, my God.
So Nancy's like, wow, okay. Yeah, I guess good point there. That probably sounds like it was foul play. Nancy, though, she does point out Tiffany was wearing a pretty large diamond ring. This is, you know, obviously one of the most wealthy families in town. It's very possible that, like, you know, people know about this ring. They know that this family's super wealthy. They've seen her around town wearing this ring. Maybe that was a motive. Maybe some stranger just wandering around saw her and happened to just like take the opportunity to kill her and steal the ring. And did I say it wasn't on her hand? When Nancy found her, the ring wasn't on her hand. So the ring was missing. The chief implies, though, that Nancy could have stolen the ring herself because, you know, Nancy, I know about your mom and those medical bills, they add up real quick. And Nancy's obviously very insulted by this. And she's like, wow, so suddenly having a dead mom is motive for murder. Great. Okay. Glad that y'all called me in here for basically my help. And then you talked to me that way. So she leaves. And then Carson shows up at the station because Karen, the detective Nancy had just met in the hallway, had called him. And we, from the dynamic here, we see that Nancy and Carson are not getting along right now. She basically says to him that he has been absent ever since mom died, and he hasn't been there for her. And he's like, well, Nancy, I can't just like put my life on hold to grieve. I still have to like do my job and go to work and all this stuff. And so that's just how it's going to be. And Nancy's like, whatever. I feel like I'm not even supported right now. So she leaves and walks home alone. So she's walking down the street and all of a sudden the lights around town just kind of start flickering. And she's passing by this like dress shop window. And she can hear that children's rhyme.
God.
That chanting of Lucy Sable once was able. She can hear it. And so Nancy goes over to the window in this dress shop that it's like the lights are kind of flickering, and she sees this like beautiful, beautiful dress on a mannequin. And of course, it's one of those mannequins that like doesn't have a head. So in the reflection, Nancy kind of sees her own head floating over the mannequin. So the reflection just looks like Nancy's wearing this dress.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that's it. It's just kind of really, really creepy. And then Nancy, you know,
the
just
crown.
Oh yeah, sorry,
the crown
just kind of like magically appears over her head. And she's like, she kind of gets like a little spooked and she just like, oh, that was weird, whatever. And so she walks away and leaves. Yeah. So she goes home and she is just kind of like mulling over everything that happened that day and just like, oh, I can't believe all that happened. But then she pulls out her phone and she's looking at the fireworks video and she's like, oh, sorry, Mom. It looks like the angle that I was recording from ended up not being the right angle. I didn't actually get any of the fireworks recording like I had wanted to. But then she's watching the video and she realizes, no, she hadn't been recording the sky, but she had been recording the parking lot the entire time Mrs. Hudson was out there. So she caught the murder on camera. Okay. So she's watching the video. She sees Tiffany kind of standing out by the car on the cell phone, as we know. And then we see Nancy go out, hand her the plate. So she's just kind of standing there holding the plate. And then she just kind of like sees something and we don't see anything, but she's like reacting to something that we don't see. And she like drops the plate, screams, and she's like trying to run around the side of the car to get away from somebody. But then we see her like pinned up against the side of the car and this terrifying shadowy figure just appears right in front of her. And then the video glitches out and we can't see anything else.
The shadow, too, is, like, it's, like, taller than a human should be.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, clearly this can't just be, like, a shadowy human figure. Right. It does not look like that. It looks like a monster. Like, right. Yeah.
So, goodness, who knows what Mrs. Hudson was actually seeing, because clearly, like, this was more visible to her than it is to us watching it. But that is terrifying. So then we flash to the next day at the Claw, and she's showing the video to everybody, to Bess, George, Ace, and I think Nick is there as well, right? And everyone
Not quite yet.
Oh, yeah, he's on his way.
He's going to show up.
Mm-hmm. And everyone is like, oh, yeah, so clearly a ghost murdered Tiffany. That's the obvious line that we could draw here. And Ace is like, oh, so it's Lucy Sable murdered her, right? So Ace kind of gives us this background that Lucy, because again, Bess and Nick are new in town, so they don't know any of this, like, history and everything. So he gives them the context that Lucy was crowned Sea Queen in the year 2000, so just about 19 years ago, and then disappeared right after the celebration. And all they ever found of her was some blood on the rocks and a scrap of her pink dress that she'd worn to the prom or whatever.
It's a great legend.
Yes. So at this point, this is when Nick shows up, and it's slightly awkward because of the ex-con thing, but mostly because Nancy doesn't want to, like, tell people that they're a thing, that they're seeing each other, because I guess at this point nobody else know, but basically he forces her to tell everyone.
Such a Ned thing to do.
Yeah. So everybody knows now that they're seeing each other, and you know, it's not a big deal at all because it's, really it's not. And they're like, oh, okay, great. Cares. So anyway, back to us being murder suspects. Yeah. but Nancy at this point says, I still think the husband had something to do with it. So why don't we try to look for some sort of evidence that it was Ryan Hudson? So she starts theorizing about this, but then she stops. She's like, wait, I don't do this anymore. I'm done with mysteries. I promised myself that I was out. You know, it's just not worth it for me anymore to try this. But something must have changed her mind. Maybe it's because, you know, she might go to jail if it's not solved.
I think, Corey, it's because she actually deep down really does want to continue solving mysteries.
Of course, deep down she wants to solve the mysteries. But she's right now, she's telling herself, it's so funny for her to be in this mindset of like, ghosts aren't real. I don't solve mysteries anymore. And then, you know, flash to season four. It's like, I'm fighting the Sin Eater demon man. And Bess is over here practicing witchcraft. How did we get here? Okay. So that night, clearly she's reconciled this with herself by now. We see her breaking into the Hudson home just as Ryan is leaving. So we see him like pull away and the garage door starts to close and she sprints at it and like ducks underneath it just in time.
Love it.
Yeah. So
love it.
Really great scene here. But we see once she's inside, the wind like slams the door closed or something. And we see a blinking light on what looks like a security alarm. So she's triggered something. The police are on their way. She just doesn't realize it yet because there's no audible alarm. But she's going through, I guess she's in their bedroom or something. She's going through the bedside table. I guess it's Tiffany's nightstand. She's going through it and she notices that there's like a hidden compartment inside the drawer. So she opens it up and inside she finds this necklace that looks like a very old necklace with this like super old medallion on it. And there's also a note that says, "Tiffany, for your protection from HG." So she picks it up, but then right at the second she notices that security has arrived. So we also get this scene where Nick has figured out that Nancy is planning to do this. So he's followed her there and then he sees the police pull up and he's like, oh, great. She doesn't realize that the police have arrived. So he's like, great, now I need to like sneak in. So he also sneaks into the house behind Nancy. And as she's trying to sneak out, we see Nick come up and grab her from behind and is like, hush, be quiet. You're about to walk into the police. Basically, we need to get out this way. So they get out of the house. They flee into the bushes. But the hat that Nancy's wearing, because of course she had to be stealthy with her knit cap that she's wearing, it snags on a tree when they run into the woods. So the hat gets left behind. Oh, great.
Bummer.
So they're back in Nick's, I almost called him Ned, Nick, whoever, we're in his truck and he explains,
he's Ned.
It's not like he's Ted this time.
Just not what we call him, but that's his name.
Yeah. So Nancy's like, hey, what the heck? Why'd you follow me? And he's like, well, you're welcome. You would have gotten caught had I not, but whatever. But he explains to her that he kind of assumed she would do something dangerous and wanted to come help. So he goes to drop her off at home and he tells, wait, how did she get there in the first place if he's driving her home?
Oh, how did she get to Ryan's house?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter.
I guess she walked.
Maybe.
Or, yeah, took an Uber. I don't know.
Don't park your car outside the crime scene if you're going to break and enter, I guess. Maybe that was smart. But anyway, so he's giving her a ride home and he tells her that he wants to be closer with her, and if and when she's ready to talk, he's there for her. And I think basically he says something about her mom at this point, right?
Excuse me.
Or is that later?
So hard. I think he, he says he's ready if she wants to talk, ever wants to talk about her mom.
Yeah. And this catches her off guard and she realizes that he knows now and she doesn't know how he knows, because I don't think she wants him to know. But she says it's not a good idea for them to be serious, that she likes it being very casual, that she doesn't want to get to know him anymore, basically. So he gets really upset at her and she gets out of the car and slams the door and walks off. So they have this little tiff and
classic leaves. Ned, yes. Classic Ned move.
Very classic Ned.
I want to be serious. I'm in love with you, Nancy, but you don't love me as much as I want you to. So I'm going to get mad about it and leave.
Oh my gosh. So the next day, they're back at the claw, and Nancy goes to George and is like, hey, George, you have a lot of fishermen in your family, right? And George is like, I mean, yeah, why, what? And Nancy's like, yeah, so if you'd ever seen a necklace like this, what would you make of it? And George is like, hold on, is Nancy Drew asking for my help? And Nancy's like, I mean, maybe. If you had something to help, what would you say? And George is like, yeah, so we do have a lot of fishermen in my family, so I recognize this little medallion that is on the necklace that Tiffany had that was given to her by this HG person. So George explains that girls would leave messages in these necklaces that somehow, if you submerge the necklace in salt water, something about it will dissolve a seal, and then a center part will like open up and you can find like a note inside of it or whatever.
This is clearly so made up.
Yes. Very interesting. Very creative little bit here.
Could have just been a locket that they couldn't get open.
Right.
But sure.
Whatever. So Nancy, George is like, but like, why are you asking about this? Where did you get something like that? And Nancy's like, well, I might have maybe broken into the Hudson house. And everyone's like really shocked at her. They're like, Nancy, really? Really? Come on. Why? So then Nancy, Bess, and George go down to the water because only salt water will work to dissolve the necklace and you can't make that at home. So
yeah, can you just put salt in water? Like, I don't get it. Also, this is the thing about why it's so clearly made up, is if you actually had a medallion that dissolved when it was in contact with salt water, it would not last for years and years and years and years. And the moment that you, like, put it and wear it against your skin, your sweat is going to open it
up. Oh, yeah. Duh.
You know? So, like...
And how would you reseal it? Or would you reseal it? I don't know. Okay. Well, they go down to, they go down to the bay so that they can access some salt water. And they put it in the water and it comes apart just like they said it would. And they see this little seahorse symbol inside the necklace. And Bess and George are like, well, that's a dead end. Who knows what that could be? A seahorse in a bayside town. Who knows? Yeah. But Nancy's like, actually, I know what this is. I recognize this because it's not just a normal seahorse. It's got like a little blue gem in the center of it. And that seahorse is the exact same seahorse that is on the sea queen crown.
Mm.
So it's like this little decoration on the crown, I guess. But there's also an address to a medium. So Nancy theorizes that Tiffany got this necklace from a medium for protection because maybe Tiffany believes that she needed some sort of supernatural protection. Maybe something was going on prior to her death. So, very interesting. And then we have what is probably the greatest guest star appearance in the history of the entire world. Yes. And easily alone, this scene adds an extra flashlight to the show for me because I'm so obsessed and you should take it from here and tell us all about it.
Okay, so they go to the medium. They go to this address. Nancy doesn't want Bess and George to come, but basically at this point, Bess and George are like, you need us, Drew. Like, face it. Like, I knew what the medallion meant and you didn't. And Bess, you don't believe in the supernatural, but Bess does. So we have to come with you.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what are you going to do with this medium, right? So they go. And the medium who is a guest star is Pamela Sue Martin. Just amazing. She does such a great job, too. She makes such an amazing, like, spooky, like, mysterious character. It's so good. It's such a wonderful nod to, like, the Nancy Drew TV show history. Like, I'm so glad. I'm so glad they did this. This is what I mean about this show. Yeah.
I teared up thinking about how, like, you know, for almost 100 years now, there's been a version of Nancy for every generation, and it's been passed down from generation to generation, and, like, you know, maybe this isn't my favorite show in the world, but if it gets even one person from the next generation interested and in love with Nancy Drew the way it has for previous generations, then it's all for good. And then I started thinking about how Pamela Sue is, like, passing the torch to Kennedy, and I was like, too good. Oh, I love it so much. And, like, they couldn't have done better with getting her to agree to be on this show. It's perfect.
It really, truly is. And this is what I was saying when I said, like, that this show clearly has done its research, is clearly made by people who have a serious respect for Nancy Drew and just the Nancy Drew history in general. It's obvious, or they would have never done that. So it's like, yes, it's so good. So good. Are you actually crying, Corey?
Oh, not right now, but I teared up a little bit when I was watching. They did this specifically to make me cry. Like, they knew this would work.
So they're at this medium. And Nancy just kind of wants to ask her questions. She's like, no, like, we don't need anything. We're not here for supernatural services. You knew Tiffany, so I wanted to talk to you about Tiffany. But the medium is like, no, we need to do a seance. We're going to do a seance.
Yeah, we do.
We're going to actually speak to Tiffany. So straight to the horse's mouth, right? It's very funny. So Bess and George just basically tell Nancy to sit down and shut up and let the medium do her thing. And so they all sit down for this seance. Bess is clearly very, very into it. It's hilarious. And George and Nancy aren't super into it, but they're playing along, right? But Bess is just really committed. They all join hands, and the medium tells them to, like, repeat what she's saying, and Bess closes her eyes. It's very, very funny.
Fantastic.
And so they start the seance, and the medium asks if Tiffany's there and if Tiffany has anything that they wants to say to them. And then the table starts violently shaking. And then the medium, in a voice that is definitely not her own, says, find the dress, find the dress, find the dress. And then because they're so freaked out by this, they like break the circle and the medium like snaps out of the trance that she was in. And the medium tells them to get out, like leave, like you need to go right now. And they're like, why, what's going on? Like, is everything okay? Are you okay? And she goes, no, that wasn't Tiffany who said that. It was dead Lucy.
Oh.
What? Okay. So very spooky, very great, wonderful and everything. But like, why is dead Lucy speaking to us now? And why, what is she saying about find the dress? Why? What does that have to do with anything? Very mysterious. I love it.
Yeah.
So they leave and we kind of cut to a scene at Nancy's home. Nancy's not there, but it's Karen who is there with Carson. Karen is showing Carson a hat that was left behind at Ryan's house after it was broken into. She shows it to Carson and she's like, look, this belongs to Nancy. I know that it belongs to Nancy because this is where we learn that Karen was very close friends with Nancy's mother. And so she knows that Nancy's mom actually knitted this hat for Nancy right before her sixth grade trip to Shadow Ranch.
Love
another
it.
Another great reference.
Fantastic.
And so she found it at the scene of the crime and she took it because she's trying to protect Nancy, right? Because she cares about Nancy. And she's showing it to Carson to kind of be like, you need to deal with this. Get rid of this. Right? Carson, very lawyery, doesn't confirm or deny that it is Nancy's. he asks Karen to get rid of it. And she agrees that she will. But then right after that happens, Carson like thanks her for like trying to protect Nancy. And they kiss.
Meh.
Mm-mm. Don't like it. Don't like it. Unfortunately, a very bad moment. Nancy walks in and sees them making out. And of course, is big mad. Hugely upset, right? Because Karen supposedly was her mom's best friend. And now she's kissing her father
only
a year after she died. Mm-hmm. Like, this is gross behavior. So Nancy kind of storms out. Rightfully so, yeah. Uh-huh. And Carson follows her. And of course, you know, she's still super pissed at Carson too. And like they kind of argue and basically Nancy says, well, I'm just going to apply to school and get the hell out of here. And you can, you know, stay here and have your little secret life with Karen. Like, bye.
Yeah.
Ouch. Things are not good between the two of them.
No.
So Nancy, upset, heads straight to Nick's garage. Interesting. He lets her in and she kind of tearfully explains, like, you know, she's upset, how much she hates her life right now. Like, it was never supposed to be like this. The only thing that she doesn't hate in her life right now is Nick.
Aww.
It's sweet. It's sappy. I hate it. Whatever. They kiss and then they boink again. And yeah, so they're together now, I think. Or wait, maybe not yet. When does she say that? Maybe it might be now. I think they officially, she says that, like, wants to get to know him and she's ready to have that relationship with them. And so they're officially together. So.
No. Ish.
Yeah. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like Nick and Nancy. I like Ned and Nancy. So the next morning, after Nancy has spent the night at Nick's, Nick drives her home and Nancy walks in and Carson is standing there and he's getting ready for work, filling up his briefcase or whatever. And he kind of turns to her and tells her that you need to stay away from Ned Nickerson. And Nancy is like, first of all, who are you to say who I should date and who I shouldn't date? Look at who you're dating right now. Second of all, why would you say that? Wait, were you his lawyer? Right? Because Nancy knows that he has a criminal past, and I guess her dad's a criminal attorney. So she's like, And of course, Carson says that he can't say. He knows she should know that he can neither confirm nor deny anybody that he's worked with. And so Nancy's like, okay, that's basically a yes.
Yeah.
So she knows that Carson knows something about him, but he won't say what. Ethically, he's not supposed to say what, right? Interesting. So Carson leaves for work, and then immediately Nancy decides to break into his work files to find out what it is.
Iconic.
Nick's past. And so she finds Nick's file and sees that he was convicted for manslaughter. Fascinating. And also that the key witness in his case was none other than Tiffany Hudson.
Ooh.
Oh my God. This is such a great twist. Nick could have been responsible for her death because he has a very strong motive.
Mm-hmm.
This is when things start moving very quickly. This is where our episode wraps up in the most satisfying way.
Oh, yeah.
So immediately kind of this truck pulls up outside and it's Nick, and he's there because he wants to get her mom's blue convertible working again. Another great reference. Yeah. And Nancy's like, great. But really, she just found out that he has this motive for potentially killing Tiffany. And so she has to like kind of like hold it in and hide it unless she wants to admit to him that she knows that he could be a murderer, which doesn't seem super safe. And of course, because now her boyfriend, her official boyfriend, by the way, mm-hmm. because that just happened last night, is a huge suspect to her in this case. She's interested now, and she starts a case file. And then we get a series of very interesting scenes where we see Bess climbing into a van where she appears to be living.
I thought...
So much for a rich aunt, right?
Yeah.
She's living in a van. That's weird. Then... we see George showing up to Ryan Hudson's house. She knocks on his door. He opens it. And she tells him, hey, we don't have to hide our relationship anymore because you're not married and I'm not in high school anymore. What? Okay. So George and Ryan had a secret relationship. One, when she was in high school. Ew. Two, while he was married. Ew. Right.
And still ongoing, evidently, even.
And also, yeah.
His wife's death.
Yeah. And so George probably has a motive.
Uh-huh.
And Ryan has a motive.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see the scene zooms out and we see Ace far away from them, looking at them, taking a picture of them, meeting at the door, and sends it to Chief McGinnis.
Ooh.
What? Ace is following George and reporting things to Chief McGinnis? And then we see Ned finding a package in Nancy's mom's car while he's working on it. And he seems to be very familiar with this package. Like, this is not a surprise that he's found this. He, like, finds it and takes it and puts it somewhere.
Hmm.
And then we see another shot of Bess in her van. She's, like, laying on the floor amongst, like, her comfy blankets and everything. And we see her pull out her hand. Pull out a ring, put it on her finger, admire it, and we see that it is Tiffany's engagement ring.
That's a motive right there.
So she stole it off of her corpse, right? Or she killed her for her ring.
Right.
And then we got a flashback to Nancy's house after seeing all of this these very interesting little scenes. The power goes out. So Nancy goes downstairs with her flashlight, which, yes... Love a scene with Nancy holding a flashlight.
Oh, yes.
She goes downstairs and she's like, I think she's like on her landing or something. And she looks behind her because the attic door, like the door that's in the ceiling to the attic, violently opens, like slams open, and the ladder slides out all on its own. So she goes up into the attic. It's just a very spooky attic. It's dark. It's nighttime. The lights are out. It's clearly just used for storage. And she sees over in the corner a little piece of loose wallpaper. And then I don't know if she actually hears this, but in the show we hear that Lucy Sable rhyme start being recited again. And she slowly peels the wallpaper off the wall. And the Lucy Sable rhyme is scratched into the wall.
Like what?
Like with like fingernails. Like
what?
Someone has scratched this into the wall.
How? Why? How? What?
So at this moment, I don't know why. We have a little flashback of Nancy remembering that scene from the beginning of the episode when her parents were burying or unburying that trunk. Remember that? Mm-hmm. Talking about that? She realizes in the attic, she sees that exact same trunk. So she opens it. And inside is a blood-stained pink dress. And as she's standing there over the trunk holding this blood-stained dress thinking, what were my parents involved in? Behind her, we see the horrifying ghost of Lucy Sable standing there. And that's the end of the episode.
What a pilot. What a pilot.
So good.
Doesn't that make you want to devour the entire season right then?
It really does. Yeah. It really does. After watching a few more episodes, I did not feel that way originally. But what a show. Like, what an episode that's full of such promise.
Absolutely. I mean,
so exciting. Like, just so... like mysterious and spooky, and it's just so fun to watch. And you have all of these scenes of like clearly stuff is interesting going on in the background, and all these people are suspects, and you know, we don't know who to trust. And it's just, I love shows like that. And so it was just such a, yeah, it's such a good show. It's just such a good episode. Yes. And so, yeah. Which does make the rest of it disappointing because it's not what I feel like this episode promised. It kind of gets away from that. But ultimately, I'm not here to judge the whole show. Just judging the episode right now. And so I think it's so good. Okay.
Where should we start?
I don't know.
Why did they keep this dress? Why did they have this dress? Why was it buried in the backyard?
Burn it.
What would be the point of burying it in the backyard, unburying it, and then hiding it in your attic?
I mean, the thing is there a lot of questions that we can't answer without talking about future episodes and future plot? True. So, I don't know. I mean, I can't – I mean, I – okay, quick spoiler. Quick spoiler. I know that the reason why they have it is because they knew were there. Tiffany – or not, they knew Lucy, right? They were there. But why would you keep it? Is it for some reason to, like, try to keep it as evidence of the crime? And so try to, like, implicate someone later on? But then why wouldn't you do that at the time? And then clearly when that became not feasible, why would you keep it? Clearly it implicates you if you keep it. Like, I don't know. As a lawyer, I don't know why you would do that.
It just seems like they only kept it so that the writers had a reason to make Nancy suspicious of Carson.
Right.
But in practice, because if you know what actually happens, it doesn't make sense for them to keep it.
Yeah, this is the thing with these CW shows, is they don't do things for the plot, right? None of this is written for the plot. It's just written for the vibes. That's it. It's just written for the vibes of the fact that we want a spooky dress to be able to use as a plot device. But ultimately, it doesn't, like, help. Like, it just pushes the plot forward. It doesn't have to make sense. Right. Yeah.
And a lot of this is another issue that I have with the show. Just a lot of things like this, that they set it up to be so spooky, but then when you think about it, it's just a massive plot hole.
That is a big critique, too, is that even... I mean, like, I feel like at a certain point I could excuse the supernatural if it was coherent, you know what I mean? If it was grounded, but it's just not. Yeah. If there was still a mystery and there were still, like, a solution to the mystery and we experienced the supernatural throughout, then okay. But the thing is, like, they just write things off as being supernatural, and because it's magic and supernatural, whatever, it doesn't have to make sense, which is frustrating as a viewer because you – live in reality and you want your shows to make sense. You're not just sitting there to watch most of the time, not just sitting there to watch just colors flash in front of your face, you know?
Right.
You want a story, you want a coherent story. And so it's annoying.
Of course.
But all the CW shows get that way. They all become incoherent. They truly do.
Which is a shame because Nancy Drew doesn't deserve that treatment.
Yeah. Like, I think ultimately I vibe with the concept of a Nancy Drew CW show, of a not your mother's Nancy Drew, mm-hmm. of a sexy kind of – I could even vibe with a supernatural Nancy Drew. And I think maybe we talked a little bit about this previously. I could even vibe with the concept of what if all of the Nancy Drew stories were actually supernatural. And Nancy becomes less of a mystery solver and more of like a supernatural buster, like a Ghostbuster type character. Yeah. I could even vibe with that.
I mean, that's basically what happens.
Yes, but it's still – they still try to be a mystery thing. And true. Doesn't make sense. Like
right.
the way that they solve it and the things that happen. Even the supernatural stuff, like it isn't grounded and it doesn't make sense. And so like I still think that you could do that. Like you could make a supernatural story – that made sense.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. So it's like, it just doesn't succeed at that. And this is kind of what I was alluding to at the beginning of the episode, is I think that there is a way that they could still have this premise and this trope. And I think that it would be successful as Nancy Drew with a supernatural mystery vibe or whatever, if they chose to make it truly episodic.
Yeah.
Because then it wouldn't have to make so much sense.
True.
Then it can be totally contained in that episode. And even you can even do whatever you want with all the character drama within that episode. And it's just episodic. And I think that that would solve a lot of the show's issues. And they could still keep the kind of campy, spooky element and still explore the supernatural when they want to and when they don't want to, and still explore all the mystery elements when they want to and when they don't want to, and not have to have them connect, and be able to explore all the plot that they want to between the characters and not have to have it connect. Like Nancy can be mad at Carson in one episode and not in the next. Like, you know, it can totally resolve itself, or it cannot, and then it never has to be brought up ever again. And I think that honestly even still kind of parallels the original stories in such a way, because they are so episodic.
Absolutely.
It doesn't make sense how they don't connect. One day Nancy is in Holland and we don't know why. And now she's going on a boat across the sea. We don't know why. Yeah. She just is. but it doesn't have to make sense because it's not connected to the previous episode. And so I think even though, as much as I love a series long mystery arc and I want a Nancy Drew that has that kind of big thing to keep me interested, I think for this type of show to be more successful, I think that would be a formula that really worked, that Absolutely. Would work.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just think it just fails. It's just trying to do too much. I feel like it needs to focus its niche a little more.
I wish it had found a better balance of this horror supernatural mixed with the mystery, because I've said this a lot. I think I've probably said it on here already a lot of times, but I feel like the supernatural aspect takes away from the mystery thing. That it's not just like it's not a good balance. It actively hurts the mystery aspect of it, because we love to see a Nancy who's resourceful and smart and very good at putting things together on her own and can mm-hmm. figure things out before we, the watcher or the reader, can figure them out ourselves. Right. And it's not like that with this. It's a ghost appeared and told Nancy where to find the clue, and that's how she found the clue, not because of any actual deduction or sleuthing that she's done. And I just feel like it takes away so much, because we get that wonderful scene with Harriet Grosset, the Pamela Sue Martin medium character, telling Nancy, find the dress. And Nancy's just like, oh, weird. I wonder what that means. Haunting. Great. We know that there's this supernatural aspect to it now. But then we don't see any sleuthing on Nancy's behalf. We don't even get a chance where Nancy tries to find the dress on her own. The ghost just appears and tells Nancy where to find the dress. Mm. And it's like that pretty much the entire series of, or maybe not the entire series, but definitely this first season of, oh, Nancy needs to go solve this and find these clues, but she doesn't. But because before she can do that,
something a ghost tells her.
Yeah. Something supernatural happens to like, oh, clearly I should be pointed in this direction. And it points her in that direction. And we don't ever get this satisfying feeling of, ooh, Nancy solved it because of who she is as a character, because she's so clever and smart and so good at solving mysteries. She just found it because the narrative needed her to find it within the next 30 seconds of the show so that they could wrap up with the more spooky scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It just really takes away from it for me.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Yeah, and that is most of the criticism that I have for the show is that it's not, there's almost no like structure in the show because it can just be like, oh, well, we're doing this now because this random supernatural thing happened. And so that's why it's so hard to watch is because it's like at any moment there isn't any coherence to the plot. Right. It's just like, well, we're over here. No, now we're over here. Look over here. Don't look over there. Like, it's a very classic CW. So I just, there's only so much of it I can take. And when it comes, even with shows like Riverdale, which I loved the beginning of, and even with Sabrina, which I loved, which we talked about, those, you know, kind of hit CW shows, like there's only so much of that I can take in one sitting because after a while it just gets so hard to continue to watch the plot just dissolve and not make any sense.
Yeah.
And so it's so when you're watching it with something that is so important to you as Nancy Drew is to me, it's like it's harder, right? It's harder to stomach. Because you have this internal idea of what you want it to look like, and it never can meet that. Yeah.
The show asks you to suspend a lot of disbelief in order to follow along with what they're trying to convey to you. So, and it's not that Nancy never struggles. She absolutely has struggles. It's just never struggles that pertain to the mystery. It's always, oh, I'm still dealing with this internal trauma that I have going on. And also there's a mystery, but the ghost is going to tell me how to do that. So I'm not concerned. I'm just going to continue fighting with Carson and having these interpersonal dramas with the other characters. So we do have a lot of struggle and a lot of character growth in that sense, but not of I'm going to sharpen my mystery solving skills because of the great detective that I am. And I'm going to learn
struggle
from
with the mystery. It's not man versus knowledge,
right?
It's man versus man or man versus ghost,
right? So she is having these conflicts, but then when it comes to the mystery, the writers make it very easy for her because, oh, we have this issue that's going on in the story and the mystery of the episode, but it's not a problem because Bess has a spell that will negate all that, and then we'll just need to find the next relic that Bess will also have a spell for, but then we're just going to have this side drama of like character conflict.
This is part of why I think that like an episodic formula would work so much better for this show than a season long arc. Because if you think about the mystery stories and other Nancy Drew stories, sometimes it's like that. Like sometimes it can be like, well, this just fell into Nancy's lap, or like this explanation really doesn't make sense, but we can suspend that disbelief because in that form of media, that book, that show, whatever, that movie, it makes enough sense because it's not connected to anything, and we can keep kind of our characters acting in a certain way in these different circumstances that makes sense and allows us to suspend that disbelief. Whereas when you have this kind of long arc, you have to follow some kind of pattern. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you can't keep up with that arc. And so it makes it harder. And it's like, you could make this so much easier on yourself if you just stopped trying to do that. You just let that go.
The books absolutely have a lot of serendipity that they rely on for Nancy to solve the mystery. Absolutely. There's a lot of like, well, that was a really convenient coincidence that Nancy happened to solve it in this way. And Nancy definitely does have this kind of like golden lining around her that doesn't ever allow her to things are just easy for her in that sense, but it doesn't feel the same way here at all.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree. As far as like the actual episode goes, though, I have very little complaint.
Absolutely.
I think the only thing that I think I didn't like that I would have maybe saved for a little bit later was the Carson drama. I think because the way that we set it up, we already have so much set against Nancy, right? Like she's a murder suspect. Her mom just died. She's not where she wants to be. I feel like that's enough. But the fact that she is warring with Carson just kind of like immediately feels like too much.
It was.
And also I feel like just, and this might be a stupid thing because I'm such a Nancy Drew fan, but I just feel like you have to show at least a history of Carson and Nancy being super supportive of each other.
Otherwise, how are we going to know what that underlying relationship is?
Right, because it doesn't matter if they're just constantly bickering and fighting and they hate each other. Then it's like, okay, well, this is par for the course, right? So it doesn't have any significance if that's just how their relationship always is. But we never even saw, like in the flashbacks, we never even really saw Nancy and Carson bonding or anything like that that showed that Nancy and Carson had a solid, you know, father-daughter relationship. All we have is that conflict. So I would have flipped that around. I would have had a solid Nancy and Carson relationship. Like, he picks her up from the police station. He's very concerned about her. She's appreciative of his support. They have that moment. He talks to her about what's going on. He gives his advice or whatever. Mm. And we can have that moment and be contained and they don't have to fight. And then maybe at the end of the episode, she sees him and Karen kissing. But we can't be warring the whole time, because then it's not injuring to Nancy.
Right.
You know, it's not further injuring. Like, the relationship's already broken. So I just feel like that should have been saved, at least for later in the episode, but I would hope later in the series, to kind of really build up so that it means more when it's more damaging. It allows Nancy to get another punch, right? Like, our hero can get a bigger punch if we allow things to be rosy for long enough, right? So
that would have been a lot better.
That's my one criticism of the pilot, is I feel like it's just a little bit too much personal drama right away.
I agree with that. Well, who were those friends at the beginning? The friends and the boyfriend in the graveyard. What was up with that?
Perchance there's a Helen in there. But the boy, I don't know.
Yeah, because it's two girls that she's like singing with or whatever. And then the guy pops up from behind the gravestone. They don't name them. They don't really even have any. I mean, they have a couple lines, but that's the only scene that they're in the entire show. They never come back. So a theory here.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And I don't know who they are. I don't think that they're anybody. I just think they're bad friends that Nancy's no longer with because they're bad friends. So we know Nancy takes a gap year after she graduates high school. So we can assume that these friends are in her same year in school. So maybe they just have gone off to college and that's why we don't see them anymore. But I don't know. I think it's kind of weird because, and I don't want to spoil anything too much, but later we are going to learn that that is the night that Nancy's mom died as well. That because she was really sick on her deathbed and Nancy like didn't want to go to the prom because she wanted to stay with her mom. But mom and Carson were both like, no, you shouldn't have to miss your prom for this. We still want you to have that memory. So she goes to prom. And then when she comes back, mom has already died. So
brutal.
What kind of friends are these that maybe they don't like, maybe they go off to college. So they're not staying super, super close. They don't see each other all the time, but like, maybe they just weren't there for her at all during that time. And so they're not friends for a reason anymore because Nancy got no support from them and they just abandoned her. And probably same with that boyfriend that they broke up.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we never hear from them again because, hey, this really important night in Nancy's life, nobody was there for her. And then we just never see them again.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that's definitely plausible. And I think, you know, even just, you know, excluding the mom death or whatever, like just if they were just flaky high school friends and they just all went their separate ways, I would also buy that. I mean part of me does wish that like there were some reference to their names, like maybe one of them was Helen and I don't know, and that'd then they come back later, right? And like they visit and they're like, oh hey Nancy, and get embroiled in whatever drama it is that Nancy's currently embroiled in. I think that would be super fun. But obviously that doesn't happen. But
they're just like stand-ins. They really don't have anything. Yeah.
Yeah. What I do think is interesting about them is that it's two boys – or it's two girls and a boy. So it's almost the same structure that we're really used to with Nancy, with Bess and George and then Ned, right? It's like her group. But it's not Bess and George and Ned because we meet Bess and George and Ned later. And so
that's what it was the very first time I ever watched this pilot. I was like, oh, clearly that's going to be Bess and George and Ned. And then later I'm like, those aren't the same actresses that were just in that first scene. That's very strange. So, and then they just never address them ever again in the entire show.
Yeah. I think symbolically, it's really interesting that they do that. Like, you know, the fact that, of course, we don't get their names. So really all they are is like stand-ins, right? But so Nancy's still having like these kind of gal pals and then one boyfriend. Like that's the structure that we see Nancy in. That's that we see. Like she never has another iteration, but also the way that they kind of frame the before and the after of Nancy, right? So like this is before Nancy and then she gets a later after Nancy. The situation is very, it's very tropey. It's almost like classic teen horror. That scene where it's like two giggling girls and they're all in prom dresses and the boy jumps out and scares them and like they're in a graveyard. So it's very, it's like the beginning of a horror movie, of a teen horror movie. That's so classic. But then after that, it's a little bit more complex, right? There's more complexity. And so I think it's really interesting to see that like before Nancy versus the after Nancy and how they frame that, right? As like, this is, they're using this kind of scene with these people with Nancy's classic structure so that we know that it's Nancy, but we're seeing her very different from like the Nancy that you are used to and expecting. Right. They're trying to say that like, this is not the trope, like even though it's still really, it really is, but it's very clear that like, that's how they are trying to use it. And so I think that that's really interesting. Thematically, but but yeah, but I wish that it was Helen and Nancy dates other people. She's dated other people. I don't think they've been ever been named, maybe just like one-offs.
You mean later in probably the show,
no, in the Nancy Drew mystery stories.
Oh, of course, yeah.
She just goes on like one-off dates with guys occasionally. But so it might be fun,
yeah,
to do something like that, but. Probably a little bit too of a deep reference, deep cut. Probably no one.
Hey, who's Helen?
Yeah.
I don't want Helen to be the friend that abandoned Nancy when her mom dies and just goes off to college anyway.
She is. Helen does abandon Nancy again and again.
True. True.
Anyway.
Well, what else you got?
No, not really. Not a whole lot. I mean, the stuff that I don't like about the show is stuff that I've said that I don't like about the show before. Yeah. And as far as the pilot goes, I honestly just think it's too good to really criticize that much.
It's too good for the rest of the show.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. But I mean, I would highly encourage anybody to watch this pilot. I think it's great. Mm. I think it's a really great adaptation of Nancy Drew. This pilot is a really great adaptation of Nancy Drew. And I think it really bears watching. It's interesting. It's fun. It's so fun. It's peak Halloween watching.
Yes.
And I think this episode is coming out, September 1st.
Get you started for spooky season.
Right. So we're getting into fall. And so I definitely add this to your roster if you haven't watched it already. I would recommend it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this originally aired in October 2019. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely intentional. That they fall wanted season, it to be the very Halloween-y. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes so much sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say, Corey?
No, I just love Pamela Sue Martin and I'm thrilled that they got her for this.
Yeah. Definitely.
In my notes, I somehow I forgot that she was going to show up in this, even though I talk about it every single day and will tell anybody who listens, but I wrote in my notes, Pamela Sue is here. I was like, oh yeah, she's absolutely in this. How would I not, like, how did it not click for me that I was going to be watching that scene again? But yeah, just too exciting.
Very exciting. Very, very exciting. Okay. Flashlight score.
Oh, it's a hard one. Again, we are rating just this pilot episode, not the season as a whole, so I have to remind myself of that. And like I said, Pamela Sue brings it up a whole entire flashlight just by existing. I'm going to give it a
3.75. Wow. Yeah. Really? Wow.
Is that higher than yours, lower than yours?
No. So I would give this episode 5 flashlights.
You would? 5? Wow. Okay.
Absolutely. I can't. I can't. There's nothing. I mean, aside from the Carson thing, which I feel like is pretty minor in the scope of the episode, because there's only a couple scenes with him, a few scenes, handful mm-hmm. scenes. I feel like it's just such a compelling episode of television.
It is.
It's so fun to watch. I am so – it made me want to watch the rest of the show. Even watching it again this one time and knowing that the rest of the show mm-hmm. disappointed me previously, I wanted to keep watching. I wanted to watch more. It was like, oh, yes, like it's Halloween. Like I want to see all this. I don't care that it's spooky. This is just mm-hmm. too good. And so any show that like any episode of television that I can watch again and it makes me like change my mind. Like
that's a good point.
Good ass episode of TV. And I think when I watched it the first time, I was really critical, of course, because it's a Nancy Drew TV show. And I'm always going to have a critical lens when I watch something that I, you know, really care about. But watching it again, I can't do that because it's just too good.
Yeah.
It's just too exciting. It's too fun. And so I would give it 5 flashlights.
Maybe I'm being too hard on it then. It really is a good pilot. It does make you excited to learn more and hear how, like, where it's going to go, how they're going to do things with it. Maybe I'll say 4 then. I don't know.
You don't change your score for me. You can have your own opinion, definitely.
No, but you make good points. You make good points. And the complaints that I have about it are just things that this pilot contributes, little things to larger issues within the show. Like the dress thing not really making a lot of sense. Obviously, that's not an issue for the pilot itself. But when it comes back later, it's like, I'm just judging. So. Yeah.
I just think that this show does so many things does so many things so well.
I was pleasantly surprised by how much I liked it on rewatch because I didn't remember liking it this much for sure.
Yeah, same. But it's like the characterization, it's so pretty to watch. It's such a beautiful show. The coloring and the setting is so good and the character design and honestly the writing isn't that bad. Sorry, that's a weird praise. The writing isn't that bad. No, but like when I think about like other CW television shows, it wasn't distracting to me. The writing was not distracting. The dialogue wasn't distracting. Even the voiceover, I didn't feel like was out of place. It felt really organic. And so even though like there are some like dramatic moments, that I was like, like this gets kind of soapy, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like the acting was good enough to where I was more entertained than I was taken out of it, right? And so the casting, I just have to give the most praise for, because they all do such a great job.
Absolutely.
And the plot in this episode, is a good one. And the way that it's structured is really classic. It's just the exact kind of plot that I enjoy. And so there's really, I can't, there's not nothing I can complain about for this episode. Yeah. Yeah.
I just saw your note about the colors of the uniforms that they wear at the
club. Yes. Yes.
It's just so visually pretty. And
yes.
I like how they did that a lot because Nancy's wearing a blue dress and they're all wearing the same outfit. It's like a dress that they've got like a white button down shirt underneath it and then an apron over that, but Nancy's dress is blue, Bess is yellow, and George is green, and it just looks so good together. And
yes,
by the way, they're currently auctioning off Bess's actual dress from the show on eBay. I don't know if they've already done the other dresses as well, because I'm really curious of what they went for, if they're going to sell them in the future. But I'm watching Bess's dress on eBay because I'm very curious to know how much it's going to go for. I'm not going to buy it because it's like they're asking $550 as the starting bid, and then the apron is an additional $300. So it's obviously I'm not going to buy it, but I'm very curious to know what it actually goes for in the end, of like which fan decides that they're going to shell out like $1,000 for that outfit.
No, the outfits are so good.
They really
every
are.
Costume is so good in that show, but the waitress uniform in particular, and I made a note about the colors because they're like classic Nancy Drew colors, like from the original Mystery Stories, like that blue and that yellow, and then even the green is really
that design
is a prevalent color.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's just such a like people who don't love or don't know about Nancy Drew would never pick up on that kind of thing, on that kind of like theming, mm-hmm. right? But people who do, like me, really mm-hmm. appreciate it. And so, I feel like even though the show goes so off the rails in the future, from my opinion, I feel like from the pilot alone, I can really tell that they really had a respect for the source material, at least at this point. And so I have to, I like that, you know?
Yeah. The creators of the show and the writers most of them have come out and said that they grew up with Nancy Drew. They themselves loved it. So it makes sense that it's that way. And even Kennedy herself is a regular Drew. She grew up reading the books, playing the games, and loves it just as much as we do. So it's kind of perfect that she was the one that was chosen for this. Because, like, it's perfect. Yeah.
It is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And I think you were right in what you said before about it being like a legacy, right? Like thinking about that in that lens, that like this show is like the next iteration of Nancy Drew. And it's been really successful.
Yeah. People love this show.
People love this show. And so even though it's not necessarily for me, I'm old now. And so maybe it's not for me. But thinking about it in like, the way that like this could make someone else a Nancy Drew fan. Mm-hmm. That makes my heart really happy. I can't rate it poorly. Not this episode anyway.
True. I'm trying to think of if we had been, 16 years old when this came out, if we were the target audience, what we would think of it.
It's just so hard.
Yeah,
because it is. I feel like it's hard because when I was a child, which is, I promised, just yesterday.
Yes. So recent.
it was such a different time, like just in the world. And so I can't say what I would like if I was a teen living today. I can't say what I would be into. I don't think I would have been – I mean, of course I would have been feral for it as a teen. But I don't think I would have thought it was a good show.
Fair.
But, I don't know.
I think that they hit on the supernatural horror aspect of it so much that I wouldn't have liked that as a teenager. But I think that the teen drama aspect of it would have hit home so well that I think I would have really loved it. Even, like Gossip Girl at the time. I loved Gossip Girl. I didn't necessarily think it was the best writing in the world. But I think it would have been very similar to that, where it's like, we're going to eat it up because we're the teens that this is directed at. And we love this kind of drama.
Right.
I think, I don't know if I would have thought it was the greatest show, but I would have liked that those aspects of it.
Yeah, definitely. But also, like, I think when you and I were teenagers, I think there was a much bigger emphasis on trying to be or like things or do things that were cooler or like more important somehow.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There was, I feel like, which I feel like is different in this new generation. I don't feel like there is so much of like, it's okay. I think for kids today, it's okay to like things that are kind of not like quality, like part of the reason why they enjoy it and it's okay to enjoy is because it is kind of soapy and that's fine. Like nobody is concerned about that. Whereas like, I remember like when I was a teen, like, really enjoying Gossip Girl, but it was a little embarrassing.
Yeah. You know, admit that you liked Gossip Girl.
Yes.
You didn't admit you liked Nancy Drew either. Cause that's too young. That's baby stuff.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And I hope, and I think from what I understand of the youths today, which is, I admit, very limited, but I believe that that is a little bit less, but what do I know? What do I know?
They've overcome so much.
Yes. I hope you have. I hope you all have. I hope you guys live in nirvana and bliss.
Yes.
I know you don't, but I hope at least you don't have to be embarrassed about the television shows that you enjoy.
Hey, the teens love this show. They really, really do. And there's, wow, that sentence made me sound so old.
The teens.
The teens love this show. It's very, very popular with the target audience that it was meant for. So
good.
Go figure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's almost like people who make the shows know what they're doing.
Yep. I'm glad it hit the right notes for the target audience that it was meant for. Because again, if even one non-Nancy Drew fan discovers Nancy Drew this way and loves her because of that and, you know, finds the books, you know, beyond that, then that's wonderful. That's great.
Definitely.
Well, I love
it. What a good episode. Okay. Alrighty. Well, do you want to talk about what we're covering next?
So for the next one, we are going to go back to the mystery stories. And you might be thinking, Corey, what? Y'all just did the mystery stories. I thought we were doing TV now. What's going on? Why are we jumping around? You'll see. Solve our monthly puzzles and you'll know why. But we're going to cover mystery story number 23, Mystery of the Tolling Bell, which I'm extremely excited for because, as I was saying to you earlier, I have very few actual specific memories of reading Nancy Drew as a child, and this is one of them for me that I remember actual specific things that happen in this book.
This has also been highly, highly requested for us to cover. I think several people have been like, you have to cover Mystery of the Tolling Bell because it is so wild at certain points. So I'm very excited to read it for that reason. So I'm also excited. But as Corey said, if you're like, this doesn't relate to the CW show at all, right? How do these two things connected? Just keep listening.
I promise they will.
Pay attention to our Instagram and solve the monthly puzzles and you might get some kind of idea.
Right. And the I don't know if we've said this, the last couple and the next couple are all connected. So just solving this month's isn't enough. You need to go back and solve the past few and then the next coming ones to really get the full context.
I'd say you probably need to solve June's and July's as well as August to get a really good idea. So
have fun with that.
Have fun.
Let us know when you solve it and if you figured out what the trend is.
Can DM us on Instagram or email us at regularnancydrew@gmail.com. But we will see you next time, Regular Drews.
See you then.
Thank you for listening to Regular Nancy Drew. Email us at regularnancydrew@gmail.com.
If you like this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
You can also follow us on Instagram at @regularnancydrew and Twitter at @regularnd.
You can also support us on Patreon. Patrons at the $3 level vote on upcoming episode topics and get exclusive access to our Scoop Sesh series.
And all patrons receive early access to each episode as well as weekly bonus content.
And to all you Regular Drews out there, thanks for listening.